This is VOA News. I'm Michael Brown. North Korea has launched its first operational tactical nuclear attack submarine, state media reporting on Friday. We get more VOA's Scott Walterman.
North Korean leader Kim Jong-un, who attended the launch ceremony, said arming the Navy with nuclear weapons was an urgent task. In 2019, state media showed Kim inspecting a previously unreported sub that was built under his special attention. At the time, analysts said the apparent size of the new vessel indicated it was designed to carry missiles. Scott Walterman, VOA News.
U.S. President Joe Biden is bringing an ambitious message to this weekend's G20 Leaders Summit in India. His offer for the global summit is this: whatever happens to China's economy, the United States can help fund your development. More from Reuters' Jillian Kitchener.
Biden is hoping to persuade fast-growing economies in Africa, Latin America, and Asia that there is an alternative to China's massive infrastructure plan called the Belt and Road Project, which has funneled billions of dollars to developing countries, but left many deeply in debt. Part of that pitch involves reforming the World Bank and boosting its funding under President Ajay Banga for infrastructure in the developing world. Washington thinks a rebooted World Bank could meet the Global South's needs and serve its own interests.
Jillian Kitchener reporting. Torrential rain in Hong Kong on Friday has led to widespread flooding across the densely packed city, submerging streets, shopping malls, and metro stations as authorities close schools and ask workers to stay at home. The Chinese Special Administrative Region saw the highest hourly rainfall since records began more than 140 years ago. For more news, voanews.com. This is VOA News. A cyclone that hit southern Brazil has led to flooding that has killed dozens and left thousands homeless. AP correspondent Karen Chamas has that story.
In the city of Mucum, resident Marcos Antonio Gomez walks on top of debris that was once his home. He told the AP, "The water arrived very fast. It was rising 6.5 feet an hour. After managing to flee, he came back to a scene of utter devastation. His house, amongst many, had been flattened. We're trying to recover a bit of what's left, but there's very little left. Nothing, actually. Not even clothes." But Gomez was one of the lucky ones. In one house in his hometown, rescuers found 15 bodies. I'm Karen Chamas.
Mali's interim government said Islamist militants attacked a military camp and a vessel in the northeastern section of the country Thursday, killing at least 49 civilians and 15 soldiers. Around 50 assailants were killed in response, and 3 days of national mourning declared, according to the interim government. Mali is one of several West African countries battling a violent insurgency with links to Al-Qaeda, an Islamic State that took root in the country's north back in 2012. With the start of a new school year, some cities are faced with how to accommodate large number of migrant children here in the U.S. The AP's Lisa Dwyer has that story.
Several major U.S. cities have struggled with an influx of thousands of asylum seekers who have filled up homeless shelters. Now, they must figure out resources to accommodate the influx of non-English-speaking students. New York City's shelter system was especially overwhelmed, but Mayor Eric Adams says the city's nearly 1,900 schools are well prepared to welcome migrant children into the classrooms. Others say there still is not enough resources to go around. Illegal border crossings fell sharply after the Biden administration introduced new restrictions in May, but the numbers are rising again. Families with children now account for about half of the arrests of people crossing the border illegally from Mexico, with more than 91,000 arrests in August, making it the busiest month ever for apprehensions of migrant families with children crossing the southern border. I'm Lisa Dwyer.
More than a decade after tsunami destroyed the Fukushima nuclear power station on Japan's Pacific coast, the country has begun releasing the treated wastewater on the site of the disaster. The move is sparking anger in the region, despite assurances by scientists that the process will not be harmful to the environment. Japan and South Korea have been the sites of large demonstrations against the release. For more news, please join us at voanews.com. I'm Michael Brown, VOA News.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Botti in Washington. Today is Friday, September 8th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. President Museveni assures Ugandans of security despite terror threats.
This is what I ask the population to do. No strangers entering your church. Anybody whom you don't know in the area must be challenged and isolated and reported to the police.
The UAE denies reports that it is arming a Sudanese paramilitary group. Zimbabwe's main opposition party seats members in parliament despite rejecting election results. Zambia's main opposition party sees political motives behind the arrest of a former first lady. Some Gabonese welcome the military junta's appointment of a civilian prime minister.
Raymond Dongsima is a man of law. He believes in order, so I think he's truly the right person for the job.
And Tunisia's president starts new crackdowns as families of political prisoners demand their release. Those stories and more, and Samson O'Malley Sports are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Uganda's President Yoweri Museveni is calling on citizens to be vigilant following the recent terrorism incidents in the country. In an address to the nation on Thursday night, he assured Ugandans the security situation is under control. He commended the cooperation with neighboring Democratic Republic of Congo and said the two nations will eradicate the Islamic State-backed rebels, the Ally for Democratic Forces, or the ADF, that are operating in DRC. Reporter Mugumi Davis Rakariji has more from Kampala.
Following the terrorism scare last week, in which some suspected terrorists were arrested with improvised bombs, the Ugandan president assured the nation that the government is in control. Museveni appeared on national television wearing a military uniform as addressed matters concerning security. He said Uganda and the DRC will continue to work to eradicate the Allied for Democratic Forces, or ADF, that are alleged to have been involved in several terrorist acts in the two countries for over a decade.
Fortunately, the Congo government, we have shared with them our concepts here. The concept of the mobile forces to hunt the terrorists, the zone of forces to remain in the area so that in case anybody comes back, they are there. And also the LDUs to guard the villages. If there were LDUs in Nyabugando, that place there, if there had been some local LDUs, that killing of the children would never have happened.
LDU stands for Local Defense Units, Village Guards. In June, about 40 students were killed and more than a dozen were kidnapped by suspected ADF forces in Western Uganda district of Kasese. This week, the police said they had foiled a planned bomb attack on a local church by the rebels. President Museveni says Ugandans should not panic, but rather be more vigilant.
This is what I ask the population to do. No strangers entering your church, please. Anybody whom you don't know in the area must be challenged and isolated and reported to the police. Nobody should enter your bar, because you drinkers, you know one another. For the buses and markets, you need to search people who are coming. There's no shortcut for that.
Political activist Norman Turia Temba says President Museveni should ensure Ugandans are safe.
We are glad that he has come out to speak and he has come out to assure the nation that we are safe, but he should walk the talk. Let him put whatever he has said into practice. Let him focus on guarding our borders. Let him focus on the security of the citizens.
Turia Temba is calling on security agencies to work with international intelligence networks to ensure the safety of all Ugandans. For VOA News, I am Mugume Davis Rwakarinji in Kampala, Uganda.
In Zimbabwe, members of the opposition Citizens Coalition for Change joined their counterparts in the ruling ZANU-PF for swearing-in ceremonies of members of parliament in Harare and councillors in different parts of the country. From Harare, Rutendo Mawere has the story.
The national organizer for the opposition Citizens Coalition for Change, CCC, Amos Shibaya, says despite the party's rejection of last month's election results, they will occupy the parliament and council seats which they won. Shibaya is among the members of parliament that were sworn in Thursday in Harare.
Our position is very clear that the elections were rigged, but our position is we defend what we have and fight for what was stolen from us. So we'll continue to also lobby the international community until our matter is resolved, and also the political pressure, which I can't divulge at the moment.
Taurai Kandishaya is a member of the ruling ZANPF who also contested and lost in the August plebiscite. He says the opposition is not sincere.
Rejection of eventual results, but accepting results for parliament and senate and council, it simply means that they have an agenda, and the agenda is to destabilize our country, to disturb our peace, as well as to continue holding people at ransom up until we get to the next election.
The Zimbabwe Electoral Commission declared Mnangagwa winner of the August presidential poll with 52.6% of the vote, while the leader of the opposition, Triple C, said to have earned 44%. The opposition rejected the results and are demanding fresh polls, alleging the elections were not free, fair and credible. Observer missions from the Southern African Development Community, the African Union, COMESA, the European Union and the Commonwealth and the US say the elections were marred by irregularities that compromised the credibility of the polls. Some of the observers also say voters were intimidated by Forever Associates of Zimbabwe, a shadowy group affiliated with the ruling party that was conducting exit surveys as people voted. Authorities say the group did not break any laws. Reporting for VOA Africa, this is Rutendo Mawere in Harare.
A Gabonese human rights and democracy activist says he welcomes the appointment of Raymond Ndong Sima as the country's new civilian prime minister. Ndong Sima, an economist and former prime minister under deposed President Ali Bongo Ondimba, was chosen Thursday by military leader General Brice Oligui Nguema. In another development, the strongman also said this week that President Bongo was free to leave the country and travel abroad. Rights and democracy activist Frank Jogtin tells me that Ndong Sima is the right person for the job.
Raymond Ndong Sima is a man of law. He believes in order. So I think he's truly the right person for the job. For the last 14 years, the country has been run without order. And I know that he will be able to bring order to this nation. The Gabonese people are aspiring to a country where everybody will be respected, where everybody will abide according to the law. And I think that he can personify this kind of attitude. So I think it's a good choice. It's a good choice because it's also from the opposition. It's also allowing to legitimate the regime of the military. I wanted to see a sharing of power between the military and civilian. And today, the first step happened.
When you talk about you like to see sharing of power between the military and the civilians, do you think main opposition leader, Mr. Otter, might accept to serve in a transitional government?
I don't think he will accept any position because while he was running, he already said that he will not accept even becoming the prime minister. He's running for presidency of Gabon, and because he's running for that, he doesn't want anything else but the presidency of Gabon.
What do you think about the other development? The military junta has said that former President Bongo is free to move around, including even to leave the country. What do you make of that?
I know many of my fellow Gabonese will be saddened by this news, but we have to look at it objectively. In 2018, Ali Bongo had a stroke, and that stroke transformed him drastically. I truly believe that since 2018 up to now, Ali Bongo did not lead this country, but other people around him were governing Gabon in his name. And we have to know also that he's not doing well. I mean, his health is very fragile. So I think it's a good thing for him to go wherever he wants to go. The people who stayed behind and who actually spoiled Gabon, the people who did harm to the Gabonese people in his name, they will have to face the consequences and the justice of the country.
Thank you so much again. A pleasure to speak with you always.
Thank you so much.
Frank Jogtin is a Gabonese human rights and democracy activist. He was speaking with us from Toulouse, France. You for listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Friday, September 8th. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And still to come on our program, Samson O'Malley Sports. The United Arab Emirates has set up a field hospital and is distributing aid in Chad to assist refugees fleeing alleged crimes against humanity in neighboring Sudan. However, a recent report by the Wall Street Journal said the UAE is also supplying weapons to the paramilitary group allegedly carrying out many of the atrocities. The UAE denies the accusation. Henry Wilkins reports from Ade, Chad.
Hundreds of thousands of refugees are in Chad after fleeing atrocities allegedly committed by ethnic Arab militias, whom they refer to as Janjaweed. The Rapid Support Forces, or RSF, which is fighting the military in Sudan's civil war, was created from and is linked to the Janjaweed. It's led by Mohamed Hamdan Dagalo, better known as Hameti. One refugee described how her community came under a Janjaweed attack.
They were dressed like normal citizens. Two or three of them started killing and attacking people. That's what I saw. Those Janjaweed members were burning our houses, so we started running. They killed a lot of people.
In May, representatives from a United Arab Emirates aid group visited Kufrun to draw attention to its efforts to help refugees like Bada. As the UAE promotes its humanitarian efforts in Chad, an August article by the Wall Street Journal, a US newspaper, said the UAE was supplying weapons to the RSF. The UAE has denied the allegations. VOA asked an expert on the conflict whether the allegations, if true, could prolong the conflict. Bakari El-Midni is a Sudan expert at Long Island University.
Sudan will never find peace if we don't find a way to deal with the UAE, i.e. I have been saying this like multiple times. Political leaders, whoever is going to be our state men and state women running the country, they need to go directly and sit down with UAE leaders. What exactly do you want from Sudan?
Much of Sudan's gold output, which is largely controlled by RSF leader Hameti, is sold in the UAE. The UAE could gain on a few fronts from its reported support of the RSF in Sudan, said Brendan Nivelle, a PhD candidate in political science who specializes in the Horn of Africa.
I think it's a mix of political and economic interests. I think the UAE wanting to get rid of all of the Islamist elements from the former regime in Sudan. And then the economic aspect, Hameti's still, I mean, for years, he's been using the UAE as a platform for his financial activities.
Adam Abdurrahim Yunus and his family also fled Sudan because of atrocities blamed on the RSF. He echoes the feelings of many Sudanese who say Hameti should never rule the country because of the crimes committed by the RSF and Janjaweed. He says the Janjaweed are killing people and waging war in Darfur, and that their main goal has always been for Hameti to take control of the country away from the army. What he succeeded in doing, however, is uniting the country against him, meaning he will struggle to rule. In a statement made to VOA, the UAE Ministry of Foreign Affairs said, "The UAE categorically refutes the claims and allegations detailed in your story. The UAE has not supplied arms and ammunition to any of the warring parties in Sudan since the outbreak of the conflict." Henry Wilkins, VOA News, Adre, Chad.
The acting president of Zambia's main opposition Patriotic Front Party says the arrest of former First Lady Esther Lungu and other family members and former officials is a ploy by President Hakainde Hichilema to peel away the presidential immunity of former President Edgar Lungu. Zambian police on Wednesday arrested and charged Esther Lungu and four others with theft of motor vehicles and a certificate of title for a property. The former president's son and daughter-in-law were arrested early this year in allegations of money laundering in the purchase of property worth more than $5 million. Patriotic Front acting president Gavin Lubinda tells me that the former first lady is the actual victim who has been turned into a culprit.
I think that everyone who has been following this matter will accept that this is an absurdity of the highest degree. How can the former First Lady possibly steal 3 used motor vehicles? And how could she possibly steal a property on title? This is the most ridiculous charge that any former First Lady can be charged with. The genesis of this whole thing is that the former First Lady is the victim in this transaction because the person in whom she had entrusted custody of some money was duped by a person who now is claiming her property was possibly taken from her by the former First Lady. It is a very absurd arrangement where they are the actual victim of trickery and theft is now being turned into a culprit.
We also know, sir, that the former president, Edgar Lungu, his son and daughter-in-law arrested on allegations of money laundering. So why do you think this is happening?
I want to put this in the right perspective. Beyond the son and daughter-in-law of the former president, there is also a daughter and son-in-law who also have been arrested by the police on the charge of being in possession of property suspected to be proceeds of crime. Even his close accomplices, his close colleagues, have also been arrested. Several ministers in the Edgar Chagwa Lungu cabinet have been arrested, most of them on the same charge of being in possession of property suspected to be proceeds of crime. When this whole thing started after President Lungu lost elections in 2021, I did mention to the people that these arrests of close colleagues of President Edgar Lungu were not meant only for those people who were being arrested, but they were a systematic and well-orchestrated ploy to reach to President Edgar Lungu. And we know that this is part of the scheme of President Hagainde Hichilema to try and get to President Edgar Chagwa Lungu in his pursuit of the removal of his presidential immunity.
Can it also be said that the government of President Hichilema is doing this as part of the fight against corruption?
Had this been a genuine fight against corruption, it wouldn't have been targeted at people simply because they possess property. Possession of property alone does not amount to corruption. Corruption must have a precedent ingredient of theft or of exchange of money, bribery, or illegal, illicit transaction.
Gavin Lubinda is the acting president of Zambia's main opposition Patriotic Front Party. He was speaking with us from the capital, Lusaka. In Tunisia, families of political prisoners demonstrated for the release of their loved ones. The detained were arrested for allegedly plotting against state security and have been jailed without trial for 6 months. In the meantime, authorities continue to arrest opposition politicians. Reporter Alicia Falkman has more from Tunis.
Chants by voices opposing the regime, this time demanding the release of imprisoned opposition political actors. Since July 2021, an eclectic group calling themselves the National Salvation Front once massed in their thousands to protest against Tunisia's President Kais Saied and what they called his coup d'etat. Now just a handful of people gathered in front of the appeal court in Tunis to call for the release of opposition leaders. Some 32 politicians and activists have been imprisoned. Most were arrested in February this year. Their lawyers say only 2 have been formally charged and only the leader of the Muslim Democratic Party, Ennahda, has been sentenced. Ezzedine Ben Mubarak is the father of one of the political prisoners. He explains why he came. He said that today is not a protest. It's to support the family members in prison and demand that they be released. He says his son, Jaha Ben Mubarak, was a university law professor, but because he's in prison, he no longer has a salary to support his own family. Shaima Issa, who was in prison but is currently under house arrest awaiting judgment from the military court, told Voice of America that not only has she suffered prison, but her family is continually harassed by police, including a violent attack on her sister. Family members say that mistreatment has had a profound impact on the health and mental well-being of their imprisoned loved ones. Abdelaziz Shebi, son of the leader of Tunisia's Republican Party, Issam Shebi, spoke to Voice of America at a press conference on Tuesday.
Les conditions de détention sont presque inhumaines.
He said that he's only able to see his father once a week for just 15 minutes and takes him food. The conditions are inhumane, he said. His father hasn't been beaten, but he is tortured in other ways, such as being denied access to washing facilities and toilets, even when it was 50 degrees centigrade this summer. Since their arrests in February 2023, Tunisia's anti-terrorism court has investigated around 21 people in total. The allegations include a charge of conspiring to change the nature of the state, which mandates the death penalty. Human rights organizations, including Amnesty International, have repeatedly called on Tunisian authorities to release the prisoners and end political persecutions. However, earlier this week, police raided the house of former Prime Minister Hamadi Djibeli. He was interrogated for 7 hours, then released. This follows Abdelkarim Harouni of Ennahda's Shura Council being placed under house arrest. Voice of America has contacted the Tunisian Ministry of Justice to ask if any trials have been yet scheduled for the prisoners or if they plan to release them, but have yet to receive a response. For Voice of America Africa, I'm Alicia Volkman in Tunis, Tunisia.
It's time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson Umale in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Friday morning to you, Samson.
Good Friday morning to you too, James. We begin the sports with the AFCON 2023 qualifying games. Ghana booked their place at the AFCON 2023 after a dramatic 2-1 comeback win over Central African Republic on Thursday. At the Estadio Nacional da Tudavala, Angola were held to a 0-0 draw by Madagascar in a Group E match. The draw saw Angola book their place in the 2023 AFCON finals as Group B runners-up behind Ghana, who also qualified for the tournament after they defeat the Central African Republic 2-1. Tunisia finished on the top of Group J after defeating Botswana 3-0 on Thursday evening in raids. Elsewhere, Tanzania held host Algeria to a goalless draw at the 19th May 1956 stadium in Annaba on Thursday night to secure qualification for the next Africa Cup of Nations. That goalless draw meant Uganda, who won their game against Niger by 2-0 at the Marrakech Stadium in Morocco on Thursday, fell short of qualifying for the next Africa Cup of Nations being hosted by Cote d'Ivoire. The result was only good enough to claim third place on the Group F log, with Tanzania securing second. Away from football news now to boxing, where Tyson Fury says defeat to Cameroonian Francis Ngannou is unthinkable heading into the battle of the baddest fight on October the 28th. British Fury takes on the former UFC heavyweight champion in Riyadh, Saudi Arabia, and explained the sheer scale of what he's putting on the line against Ngannou. Even though Francis Ngannou is not fighting for any title that Tyson Fury currently has, the fight organizers decided to create a new belt known as the Riyadh Champion title. This means that people are expecting Tyson Fury to have a hard time defeating Francis Ngannou, and there's actually something on the line. Cameroonian Ngannou shares his thoughts about the epic battle against Fury in Riyadh.
One thing that I make sure, the only pressure that is on me is to give everything, to put out the work that I can do, do everything that is in my position. And I'm doing that, so I'm good.
In athletics, fresh from winning the 1,500 meters and 5,000 meters double at the World Championships in Budapest, Faith Kipyegon of Kenya will turn her attention to winning a third global title this year at the World Athletics Road Running Championships Riga 2023 on the 1st of October. The multiple world record holder has been named on Kenya's team for the championships. The 29-year-old will be contesting the road mile in the Latvian capital in what will be her first ever road race. And that's it for this Friday's edition of Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a nice weekend. And that's it for this Friday, September 8th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending your week with us. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms, including Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I am James Barton in Washington, wishing that you will have a great weekend. We'll see you again on Monday morning.